Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, my friends. I'm Eric Olson. So nice to be back after a couple weeks off. As I'm sure you've noticed, Teresa and I have been sort of dividing labors on the radio show of late. It gives us a chance to work on some other things, and it gives the host the chance to be the host. But we will be getting back together again very soon. I am sure. I am thrilled to be here this evening with Patricia Corey. What an interesting individual. And she has just written her first novel, The Emissary, which I am right in the middle of reading extraordinarily quickly. We were just talking about that before the show started. I am breezing through this, and that is a great sign because I find these days anyway, when I'm reading, I kind of get bogged down, and I stop, and I think, and I ponder, and I stare at the ceiling, and I get distracted. But, man, not this time. In her debut novel, The Emissary, internationally renowned author, environmentalist, ufologist, spiritual visionary, I made that one up, adventurer, Patricia Corey, weaves a compelling fantasy that speaks to the future of life on this planet and beyond. And you know what? It may not be all fantasy. Within minutes of each other, three chilling events take place around the globe. In Los Angeles, hundreds of blackbirds drop out of the sky, zapped dead mid-flight. In Maine, residents awaken to find miles of beach covered with countless fish. And in New Zealand, 150 whales and dolphins lie dead or dying on a resort beach. A strange grid-like pattern in the clouds hangs low and menacing over the desperate scene. Into this environment jumps Jamie Hastings, psychic researcher and telepath. She forges a deep soul connection with the dying whales, which leads to a journey at sea that reveals a conspiracy to annihilate a colony of peaceful alien beings that have formed a city of lights in the deep. Oh my, that is an amazing amount of things going on in really just a few pages. By golly, all that happens in about 20 pages. Patricia Corey is a go-to authority on alternative realities and exopolitics, both on the ET UFO level and interdimensional life forms that penetrate the multiverse. That is a mouthful, and I said it all cleanly. I feel good about myself. Welcome, Patricia.
Thank you so much. Thank you for such a generous introduction.
My pleasure. What a pleasure to speak with you. And there is much more bio there. This is a woman who's been doing all kinds of fascinating things for some time now. And I suppose I should mention, besides just dumping people off to read the rest of your bio on the page, on the show page, that you will be speaking, you'll be a keynote speaker at the Glastonbury Symposium in July. And, of course, all of this information is available from her website. Well, Patricia, let's talk about the book. How exciting to have written your first novel, and it seems to be very, very well received.
It is. I'm so excited. It's just been launched in, March. So we're just getting the really first statistics. It's doing very well. But what I'm thrilled about is that it's getting such rave reviews and touching so many people on such a deep level. So that is really great. And I'm in L.A. now promoting it. And actually, I'm in the United States for a tour. And I'll be then going to Miami and New York. And then I will finally have a little break before I dive back into the sequel, which I'm now writing.
That's right. This is a first of a trilogy, right?
Yes, the trilogy is called The Hidden. And this one, of course, is called The Emissary. And the second is called The Keeper of the Crystal Skull. And, you know, you said that it was my debut novel. Thank you for that. I've written, this is my 13th book, but it's my first novel and screenplay. And I really love writing so-called, quote-unquote, fiction. I'm going to be doing more of that.
I'm very interested that you put it that way because, you know, clearly as an authority on so many of these topics that you sort of encapsulate within this story – For you, these are real things. Why don't we back up a bit and tell us a little bit about yourself and how you got to be where you are, and just as an aside, because otherwise I'll forget, but are you Jamie Hastings?
I'm getting asked that question so many times, I have to really think back at the point when I started embarked on this story. I didn't really realize how much of myself I was putting into my main character. So, yeah, I she's a psychic, I'm a psychic. She's a whale, she becomes a whale activist after some of these things occur in the story. Whereas, of course, I've been impassioned by the whales and dolphins for a decade or more. But, yeah, there are similarities, and yet Jamie Hastings is a hero, and I don't describe myself as a hero. And she has her own life, her own mission, and her own essence. But people are comparing me to her, and, oh, gee, it's complimentary, but I didn't set out to put myself out as a hero.
Well, I think it's... Not that I have written my first novel, because I haven't, but even just in the shorter fiction that I've done, what little I've done was mostly when I was younger. I'd love to get back to it. But
you should.
I know, and I will. I'm actually now – part of what's been so much fun about doing this show, which is now getting close to 2 years. It'll be 2 years in July. I've been on radio on and off forever – since the dinosaurs ruled the earth, but this time around on this show, getting close now to 2 years. And what's been so fun is, besides obviously just talking to this amazing range of people in, broadly speaking, the paranormal field, kind of really just all aspects, but in particular is talking to authors and novelists and people who do write fiction, because it really has encouraged me, and it's reminded me how important it is to kind of root around inside the imagination, and to get that material out there. You know, I feel like it's kind of one of our obligations when we're given gifts, whatever those gifts may be. I think it's one of our obligations as human beings to try to express and develop those gifts as much as we can. Obviously, we're only human, and looking at it just purely from the corporeal standpoint, you know, we have but one lifetime, which of course I want to get into further. But within that lifetime, I think that's one of the most important things that we can do is utilize these gifts. I think it's a way of showing appreciation that they were given to us. So more importantly, back to you. So I'm interested in how your kind of foundation myth led to this book. So if you don't mind, maybe just give us a little bit of your background and how you got to this point, and then we'll just go forward from there.
Alrighty. I was a psychic child and very glaringly different because my mom, I'm from the 50s. I was born in 52, so I'm no spring chicken. And my mother said at the age of 4 or 5, I would walk in and tell her things that blew her mind. Like, I told her I was from another galaxy once. I told her, I was outside in the garden because we lived in the mountains, and I said, you know, the little blue people have come and told me that I'm from a parallel universe. And this could be dialogue for children today. But back then, this was not rhetoric that we were hearing on TV or in school. And it used to shock her. But fortunately, she told me later, I knew that something special was going on here, and I was never going to censor it. So I grew up with a lot of space to be able to explore these things, and had a very psychic childhood, and never really went through the process of so many other children who are talked out of it. Because I believe that we all possess so many gifts, and we get it beaten out of us by training, by school, by peer pressure, etc. So I went through my life exploring and knowing. I like to call it walking between the worlds. And I've had contact with elemental beings, ETs, extra-dimensional information, beings that have passed over, as so many psychics have. And in that, I can say that there's a similar, let's say, a bit of me in my hero, Jamie Hastings.
Right.
But 10 years ago or more, I'd say around 10 years ago, I started going out on boats to be near the whales. And this was so utterly life-altering that I can't even describe it. And the first time I jumped in, I had the courage to jump into the open ocean to swim with dolphins. This occurred in 2010, and it was a gigantic leap in consciousness, in knowing my mission that I wanted to help them, in sheer bliss and love of these beings.
What drew you to them? What caused that particular action? And that was very brave of you, by the way, in, shall we say, middle age.
Okay. I am an adventurer, and I do go all over the world. I am a seeker. So wherever there's the unknown and the adventure, I'm going to take myself there. And I've been in and out of pyramids and up and down the cliffs of Peru in middle age. And I just am impassioned by this earth and the things that the signs, the storylines that have been left for us to explore, like one of my great passions is the question of extraterrestrial life on the planet and beyond, and how this information is encoded in so many of the sacred sites, in the pyramids, in the Mayan construct, and things like that. I'm a seeker of Atlantean wisdom, and out there in the ocean are these incredible wisdom keepers. So I was determined to go out there and see if I could begin to absorb some of that higher consciousness that I believe they hold and that they imprint on the water. And I was not disappointed. So I've been going out for years now, as often as I can. I've been out in Mexico. I've been off the coast of Vancouver, a very interesting place to encounter humpback whales is off of Nova Scotia, and that is exciting because the water is freezing and there are glaciers.
Yeah.
There were, at least when I was there. To see a whale breaching up against the sunrise with a glacier in the background, this is utterly magnificent. And I will seek them out and work for them and love them until I die.
Fascinating. How do you communicate with them? How do they communicate with you?
Well, the first big breakthrough I had, because I am a channel and I do receive information from other dimensions, the first big thing that occurred was in 2009, yes, I was teaching a workshop in Jordan, of all places, and these people were a little bit, let's say, taken aback by my style because it is another culture. It is another way of presenting oneself, and I was my usual out there personality. And in the middle of the workshop, I was telling a story, and suddenly I started to hear these bizarre calls for help. And it got louder and louder, and it was very difficult to continue the discussion because I heard this, please, 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 and it sounded like dolphins. And then these groaning calls, whale sounds, and I was catapulted psychically into the middle of the ocean where I participated in a frenzy, what I can only describe as a dying frenzy of whales and dolphins. And it so disturbed me, especially because I was standing up in front of unknown, really, people I didn't know, sort of bare to the world, and trying to cope with this. I had to run out of the room and get my wits about me. And I managed to finish the day. And then when I went back to my room that night, on the news was, all over the news, was the story that 150 whales had beached in New Zealand and were almost all dead. And this, of course, is also in the book, The Emissary. But
sure.
This what occurred when I was experiencing it. So I had had some sort of a unwanted psychic connection to their despair. And unfortunately, when you're a psychic or a whale whisperer or a psychic animal connector, you don't always get joy. You get what's coming to you. So this was the first occurrence. Then a few months later, it happened again. And a few months later, it happened again. And I remembered saying, Universe, I do not want this assignment. It's too painful. And soon after that, these messages started to come to me, which I produced as a book called Before We Leave You, Messages from the Great Whales and Dolphin Beings, which was the book before The Emissary. And since then, it's just become so immense, the connection, especially because I'm out there swimming with them. So it has become a huge part of my life, and I follow it. I always follow my passion. And at this moment in my life, my passion is to do everything I can to help them, because the whales and dolphins of our planet are in danger of extinction and of suffering, which I hope we'll be able to talk about. And that's what I'm doing, and that's what inspired The Emissary.
Very interesting. Well, with that background, I certainly see how that all fits together. I would love to absolutely talk about this mission that you're on, and it sounds like it wasn't necessarily voluntary. You were drawn into it. But why don't you, in your own words, then, just let people know, I know you don't want to give away too much, but just flesh out the story a little bit more as far as The Emissary goes. And, of course, that's available on Amazon and pretty much everywhere else, right?
It is. It's a published book, and it's published by North Atlantic Books and distributed by Random House. So that makes it available pretty much everywhere, and if a bookstore doesn't carry it, someone can always ask them to order it for them. But it's also available all over the regular sites on internet like Amazon and Barnes & Noble. So you want me to give you an overview of the story?
Yeah.
The book starts out with three calamities, and they're like vignettes. The first is a woman who, that's not right. The first occurs in Los Angeles, where I am right now, in fact. A man is coming home from work, and he stops in the street to say hello to a neighbor. And as they're chatting, 600 blackbirds drop dead, cold turkey, dead out instantaneously. And, of course, this has happened. I'm sure you remember this happened in Arkansas a couple of times.
Right. I think it's happened in Ohio.
It happened in Ohio, exactly, and it was many more than 500 or 600, as I recall. And something is causing that to happen, and, of course, I allude to that in the book. So that's the first thing that happens, and then we jump to another vignette, and that is at the same time on the other side of the planet the United States, in Maine, a woman comes out of her house with her kids, and on the backyard is the coast, the beach. And they come out to have a picnic, and she sees, to her horror, that there are tens of thousands of fish strewn about all the way down the coast. And what's really shocking about that is right now in Marina del Rey, which is not far from where I am, we've got 70,000 fish that have washed up on the beaches and the coast. Nobody knows why.
Oh, my.
Yeah. So that's kind of prophetic, unfortunately prophetic. And so she runs back in the house, locks the door, and tries to figure out what to do about it because she understands that something toxic and devastating has occurred. And the third vignette happens around the other side of the planet in New Zealand, where the hero, Jamie Hastings, is a psychic from San Francisco who is burned out. She's in New Zealand resting and just getting away from the work that she does as a psychic. And lo and behold, she finds herself in a situation where 150 whales and dolphins have beached and are dying on the beach. So this is kind of where the story kicks off, and Jamie goes out to the beach to try to help. And as she does that, she makes connection, a deep soul connection, with a humpback whale mother, who is a mother because she's bursting. She's about to give birth, but she's not going to be able to do that because she's dying. And Jamie and she make this eye-to-eye, incredible contact that many people have described. When you look in the whale in the eye of a whale, you'll never be the same again. And so she does, and she asks the whale, please allow me to make a soul connection with you and your baby. And she does, and then she helps the whale over the rainbow bridge to the other side. And this sets the stage for an adventure that gets her out onto a ship in the sea, where she has contact with numerous whales who are trying to warn her about impending devastation on the planet. I don't want to give away the whole story
It's
quite an adventure tale, and there are many twists and turns in this story, and it also deals with the possibility of alien colonies under our oceans, in our oceans, I should say.
Amazing stuff. Absolutely. Now, we can either go, since we're already talking about the whales and dolphins, and you have so eloquently stated how you were drawn and your life has been changed, as was Jamie's similarly. We can either talk about your efforts in that regard. I know you have a nonprofit and that you are very much a environmentalist, or we can head another direction. So,
well, I would
please
like to
go
share
right
with
ahead
you.
And tell us about that.
Okay, I'd like to share with you how that catapulted me to found an organization called Save Earth's Oceans Inc., which is based in it's a nonprofit. Based in California, even though I live in Italy. And it is a relatively new organization. And I am at the springboard level where I'm working to gather funding. It has to be non-corporate funding because I will not allow any corporate influence on the work we're going to do. And we just did a concert in London, which was a fundraising concert with the Royal Philharmonic Orchestra. And the intention of this concert was to raise awareness of people about the real role of whales and dolphins, which may be very different than we think. And that is, we were singing The Oceans Alive was the title of the event. And the intention was to help people really think about how important these beings are and how they hold the music of our planet intact, how they hold the emotional body of the earth intact, in balance. And this is a big theme of mine, and this is where I'm going to be putting a lot of the effort of my organization, and that is working with organizations and researchers who are exploring whale and dolphin communications on a very high level. I don't care if we figure out behavioral information. I'm interested in more galactic, higher consciousness information that I believe they hold. So this is kind of what I'm on about. And in the meantime, I'm working for preservation of the oceans, and I'm very concerned about sonar blasts in the oceans, which is another important theme in the emissary. And I am also determined that we get more wisdom, more understanding of what might be the most important or highest consciousness species on our planet. I know that we think that we are, but gee, I would like to think that there are some of the animals have a lot to teach us, and I think they do.
Fascinating. Well, what kind of beings, what kind of entities are the whales, dolphins, and are they similar to each other? I mean, in other words, are they interchangeable, or are they coming from different places? But regardless, what kind of entities do you think they really are?
I believe that cetaceans may very well be galactic beings that exist on many planets I mean, if you've got water and you've got sun and you've got all the carbon, all the elements for life, surely we're going to be seeing similar species on many different planets. It just makes sense. It's like when you walk down the street and you see somebody that looks like you or someone you know. How many times has that happened to you?
It's fairly often.
Exactly, because there are only so many combinations genetically that can occur. And when you've got 8 billion units in the human race, there's got to be some duplication. So I think that that's a given, and I believe that we most likely have that same situation going on with different planets and possibly even parallel universes. Now, I know that your show is about psychic and otherworldly subjects, so I feel I'm going in safe waters here. Yes?
Oh, absolutely. You just dive right on in and swim around.
Okay, wonderful.
With
so
or without
your
wetsuit.
I believe that whales and dolphins exist on many planets and very possibly many dimensions, and that they serve a greater role than simply swimming around the ocean and, you know, jumping through hoops for humans, et cetera, et cetera. And the fact that their music is so profound, the fact that humpback whales can sing a melody that's 30, 40 minutes long without repeating a note, or let's say without having it be a repetitive pattern, but rather a distinctive melody that can be projected 1,000 miles away, there's something more than mating calls here. And I'm determined to be part of the team that discovers what that's about.
Fascinating. Well, what is your sense, as someone who is communicating on a deeper level, what is your sense of what they are trying to tell us, or and what their music does represent?
My sense is that their music is about keeping the vibratory essence of the ocean in a state of balance. It's something like an orchestra. If you imagine all the individuals in the orchestra playing their parts without some sort of sheet music or some sort of direction, it would be chaos. But because I don't believe there is chaos in nature, it appears to me that everything has a reason, everything has a function in the perfect universe in which we live. So these whales and dolphins with these projections of these haunting refrains that go well beyond anything resembling in music that's needed for mating calls or for hunting purposes, I think they're weaving sound through the oceans in some sort of relay system, because it goes 1,000 miles away. A whale or a humpback whale that distance away picks it up and projects it another 1,000 miles, and this music theoretically is circulating the planet, all of the oceans of our planet. And I like to think of it as a weaving of sound and light, as some sort of beautiful tapestry that's holding the emotion of the earth, which is our oceans, in balance. That's what I think they're doing. And boy, do they do it beautifully. Until we disturb them with hellacious sonar, with bombs in the oceans, and with all manner of destruction, which we seem to be doing a lot more of.
That's just what I was going to say. I mean, no wonder then that you're so concerned about all of these sonic waves and what could be perceived as sonic attacks, willing or not, intentional or not, these sonic attacks on, in particular, the seas, but, of course, through the air as well, through all of these various mechanical, electronic, and just the various, you know, machinations of mankind, because it would appear both then on a physical level. I mean, clearly there's something going on where, just on a purely physical level, the various methods of sea creatures in general, not just certainly the whales and dolphins or even just the mammals, but various creatures are being disrupted. Their process of communication, of movement, of perception are being affected by these various waves. And then from your perspective, not only on a physical level, but it sounds like also on a spiritual level as well.
Absolutely. And we are seeing and hearing about marine animals that are beaching themselves, and we're finding them dead with their blood coming out of their heads, their blowholes, their mouths, because these extreme sonar blasts are literally blowing their brains out. We have to remember that these marine mammals have very large oral cavities, and that is why they've got such extraordinary sound is everything to marine mammals. They echolocate, they migrate, all thanks to their extreme sense of hearing. So a lot of them are going deaf. After these gigantic blasts, they lose their hearing, and then they go adrift. They can't find their migrational routes, and that's one of the reasons why they're beaching. And I think that another reason why they're beaching in great numbers is because they just want to get out of the water. When these bombs go off, I mean, the Navy has enacted another 5-year program of sonar, every level of blasting, bombs, chemical warfare. It's a Navy warfare study program, and they've openly said they know that, unfortunately, there could be collateral damage to the tune of 12 million, read my lips, marine mammals.
Wow.
That is more than devastating. 12 million whales and dolphins gone? And they're already washing up. We're not paying attention. So when we find these big beachings, which are ever more occurring, I think that one of the reasons why it's happening is they're just trying to get away from these horrific bombs and blasts and racing out of the water. And I have repeatedly compared this to the possibility of, for example, were a fire engine to come screaming through your living room with those decibels that are beyond bearable, the first thing you would do is run out the door and get away from it, right?
Well, I would certainly try.
Yeah, so I think that
were I not run
the
over.
Sad reality is that that is what's happening. They are trying to escape this horrific, devastating, torturous noise. And we keep doing it. The Navy is now going ahead with a new 5-year program to do just that. So I'm very concerned about sonar, and that is why it's such an important theme in the book.
Now, is all of this purely, as you said, collateral damage, unintentional, or is there anything more nefarious going on here, do you think?
That's very synchronistic. I used that very word, nefarious, a few minutes ago in another interview. I do believe it's nefarious. I do believe it's intentional. And if we really want to get out there and really go for the wild side, I think that there is intervention on this planet where even extraterrestrials are involved. And I think that there are forces that are trying to kill the whales and dolphins to bring the bliss, the joy, the independence, the freedom, and the love of this planet down for a more sinister energy to take over. And it's pretty, I know that that's a pretty out there scenario, but in my heart, I believe it. But I also believe that that will not happen. We will not let it happen, and that the light is emanating, and we are rising against that darkness.
So I've noticed that you have mentioned a few times now that this is a different time, and that this is a different time from when you were growing up, and you mentioned it in the book too when you're talking about Jamie's life, that that things are different now. So it sounds like that's something you do believe, that we are in a time of awakening. And I mean, for me, kind of looking at it somewhat from the outside. I'm certainly sympathetic. I don't think I am particularly psychic, although I certainly have had experiences. I think I'm one of these people who has probably subconsciously suppressed it at a certain point in my life, and now I'm not that far off age-wise from you. I was born in the 50s, too, just a little bit later. And I think so. I think I'm kind of coming. Part of what I've been doing with my interest in the paranormal and working on this book with Teresa, America's Most Haunted, and doing this show and the social media, and now we have a website and everything as well, is part of why I was drawn to this and am doing this is it is encouraging me just by exposure, really, to kind of reconsider some of the steps that I took earlier in my life. I think in my very young adulthood, probably late teens, early 20s, I think I, not consciously, but as I say, subconsciously, kind of made a decision to turn off or ignore or avoid some of those signals or those pathways because they were, I perceived them anyway, to be interfering with other aspects of my life, and I think I'm kind of coming back around to being more open to those things and seeing all that. But anyway, regardless, I'm very interested in where you see these things heading. What we're coming up with here, kind of piecemeal, is and ultimately this is what I was probably most interested in really coming to terms with in talking to you is I'm really interested in just kind of your overall overarching worldview, and that is beginning to come in to play. But yeah, I mean, absolutely, you're right. This is a show that where you really can be as open as you wish to be. You do not have to hedge anything. And I'm really, really interested in just kind of being able to piece together in my mind and of course, in our listeners' minds, kind of the latticework, that structure of your overall worldview, because I find it fascinating on the one hand on just the purely intellectual level, but also very I feel very sympathetic, empathetic toward certainly aspects of it, and there are aspects that really do touch a chord. So, please do feel free to sort of continue on and speculate. And it seems, in addition to what you've already said, that there's also sort of an interdimensional aspect. I'm really interested in just having you describe kind of how you see our reality.
Okay, well, it's not easy to do that in a nutshell, but I would say that if I were to really discuss this moment on our planet, I believe that we are in a state of extreme polarity and that this is not unnatural, considering that we are entering into a gigantic new age that unfortunately has been diminished as a concept by the cliche term new age, but that we are now entering into this age of Aquarius, and that it's a gigantic shift on this planet, and of course everything that involves life on this planet, from plants, from rocks, all the way to the consciousness of higher beings. And this great shift is understandably going to cause a lot of disruption. And from the disruption, you can look at disruption as terrifying, horrifying, just negative, or you can understand that in the moving from one immense age to another, a lot of the old must go. The breaking down of old, constraining structures that we no longer need must go, and I think that we are experiencing that now on this planet. There is a lot of destruction and a lot of systems that are going down, and simultaneously there is the birthing of the most unbelievably beautiful new paradigm where people are rejecting religion and understanding their direct contact or connection to spirit. That's a shocker in itself, because religion has always defined the human experience, whether it's been a confining religion or, well, religion, I believe, is usually confining. But in this time, people are abandoning even that and finding their own direct contact to God, spirit, creation, whatever you term that to be. And that is very exciting. And we are also on the cusp of true, total breakthrough as far as ET connection and disclosure. I think this is imminent. And I also believe that we are more and more able to contact and connect with animals who hold so much information for us on this planet. And of these, the great whales and the dolphin beings are about to break through and truly speak to us. I don't mean just whale whisperers like me, but I'm talking about taking their role, their place as pivotal conscious beings in the evolutionary process of this earth. I think it is an extraordinary time to be alive, and that as long as we can stay flexible and fluid and allow the passing, surrender to the process of letting go of the old, we are the true, bold new warriors of a planet in transition, and I'm excited.
Wow. There's a lot going on there.
Yeah.
I have to take a step back and, you know, sort of absorb that, process it a little bit there. Just flat out question, do you think there are, now I'm not talking so much on the spiritual or interdimensional, which isn't necessarily the same thing as spiritual.
Exactly.
Levels. Yeah, I mean, it's certainly a very plausible and currently held by many, many scientists that there are multiverses, multiple universes, and that they may or may not intersect, or I guess that they do intersect, but on the teeny, 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 tiny level. That's scientific, so that isn't necessarily spiritual. But anyway, are there, in your opinion, aliens, physical aliens, or even just one, on this planet?
Absolutely. You know,
please elaborate.
I just have to look at images of the most bizarre creatures underwater. Animals that are so completely bizarre, insane looking. And I wonder, are these animals that have popped in from another world, or is this just the incredible biodiversity of Earth? And as far as aliens as we understand them to be, I do truly believe that the government is working with aliens. We have so much proof of that, too. We have people who have openly reported well, that would be a whole show in itself, wouldn't it? But we've got even military people coming out now, physicists, a whole scientific community talking about different events that have taken place on this planet. We've got Roswell. We've got Area 51. We've got so much information about the alien contact on this planet, including bases underground, including J-Rod, an alien that was supposedly captive in Area 51 and who taught us quite a lot about species from other worlds. But I think there are troublesome aliens that are part of this gigantic, immense leap in technology. And I believe that there are benevolent, loving aliens who are not about to let this Earth become a devastation point in our solar system.
Interesting. The question for me is always, what brought them here? Why are they here? I mean, just when you look at the massive, just kind of really incomprehensible hugeness of the universe. And even just all this is so recent, just all these exoplanets that are being discovered seemingly daily. Why here? Why us? Or are they just everywhere?
Well, the answers to that can be so many. For starters, Earth is a delightful place to visit, except for the warlike nature of humans. But we have such resources here, immense resources on this planet. And, of course, I think that one of the great resources that is essential to any extraplanetary traveler is water. And Earth is 80% water. So being a planet that is 80% water would make us very interesting as far as a planet that would be important for survival, for possible exploration and colonization. And then, who knows, it may be a great location, a great stopping ground, refueling station. Who knows? It's hard for us to consider an advanced civilization or civilizations that are popping around the universe with no sweat, no problem, traveling through wormholes, not limited to our ideas that something is 100,000 light years away, but simply slipping through a wormhole and being there almost instantaneously. It's hard for us to perceive of that. So trying to perceive why any alien civilization would struggle to get here is limited to our perception of how the fiber of space. But I think it's very different than we understand it. Very different. And I think we're about to discover that as well.
Oh, that was going to be my next question. Yes, you're right. You're right. The limits of our perception in terms of space-time and travel and the fact that we're kind of stuck with the perception that I suppose it's a linear view where we do have to account for all those miles and all that time. And if we really are limited to the speed of light, then, you know, obviously that puts a very severe damper on travel on the intergalactic or throughout the universe. Have you personally?
Well, go ahead. Unless we don't understand that you can you can actually travel faster than the speed of light. One. You can alter the space-time continuum. You can pull it apart. You can manipulate it. You can move it. If you understand how to alter at the molecular electron level, you can change everything. So in my channeled material, the earlier books called the Syrian Revelations, I describe how the beings that I'm in touch with describe how ships move. And they say they simply alter the space. Understanding the elementary essence of space, they know how to manipulate at the atomic level. And we know this, but we've never put it into practice. But they say the aliens or more, let's say, more advanced civilizations simply heat up the space in front of the ship, which makes the molecules separate. Right? We know this from basic chemistry in high school. When you heat up molecules, they expand, right?
Sure. And speed
and
up.
And when you cool them down, they contract. So the Syrian High Council, and these are the beings that I am blessed to hear, say that how ships move really in space is they heat up the space in front of them, and they cool down the space behind them, and that propels them through space without any need for motors or propulsion engines or anything like that. And that's why they're able to do those 90-degree turns that we love so much. They just manipulate
really
the space
around
the
craft. Warp drive. That's
exactly.
Kind of a warp drive.
That is. Well, Gene Roddenberry, who gave us
he's
the idea of warp drive, I think he was not from this planet.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like it. The farther we get from that, you know, you're talking about ideas that were turned into a television show years ago now. It's hard to believe.
was definitely before its time. And
golly,
how much of what we were shown in Star Trek is now our reality, even from the flip-up cell phone. That came directly from, I think it was Nokia that did the first one, and they said they got the idea from Star Trek.
Well, sure, and now look at even the first steps have been made toward a transporter. You know, we're doing it still at the very rudimentary level. We're not doing large, complex physical items like a human being, but we're already able to do, to take apart and put back together very small, at the atomic level now, and you would think it's just kind of a matter of scale and time eventually. So, yeah, talk about prescient and ahead of its time. It really is pretty
astonishing. Oh, and we need to bear in mind that what we think we're doing, we the plebeians on the planet, doesn't correspond to what they're doing, meaning the industrial military complex, because they're 30 or 40 years ahead of us of what we are being told they can do. This is pretty much known. I mean, you don't really think that we're being fed up to date what the secret programs are. If we were, there would be no need for secrets. They are manipulating the weather, manipulating space, and these physics and these kinds of experiments are underway. Let's not forget the Philadelphia experiment. That was what,
right,
30 years ago? Where they moved a ship through as a time machine. And you, as you remember, the crew, some of the crew, they couldn't, when they brought the ship back in, they didn't know how to get back into the space-time continuum correctly, and some of these people were actually melded into the core of the metal of the ship. That is a fascinating story for people who don't believe the time ships and the time teleportation devices are really being designed. They should read the Philadelphia experiment.
Wow. As you have said, we could do any number of hour shows on any one of these topics, but I think we really have given people a sense of just how mind-boggling the potential, anyway, realities that are out there truly are. It's amazing. And
it's
that
a new
brings
dawn.
Us back. It's a new dawn. It really is the dawning of the good old age of Aquarius, which seems like a long time ago now, But in the time frames that we're talking about, it's, the 60s, that was a blink of an eye.
Yeah, and
not
I mean,
even.
Passing from one age to another is not like overnight, like everyone was expecting
no.
December 31st for, a gigantic boom to occur. And, we're talking about a gigantic, huge cosmic age. So, what's a couple of years in cosmic terms? But we are definitely in the thrust of it, and this is something that we are all coping with. And one of the aspects is that we're becoming a technological society and learning how to grope with that and our role as humans being faced with runaway technology. So it's a very important time, and it's a very exciting time.
How awe-inspiring and amazing and I'm sure humbling it must be for you to have what amounts to an inside view of all this.
Well, I have never thought of it that way, but it is. It's I'm very honored to be serving in this capacity, and I am very humble, and I'm in service. So I always remind myself that this is nothing to do with me. It's about being in service for the highest good as much as possible to help people understand and cope with and embrace the great changes upon us and to live life as guardians of this planet and to the fullest extent of their possible joy and celebration. That's my mission.
Well, you yourself are the emissary.
I guess in a way I am.
Which brings us back around. One of the reasons that
beautiful
you're here.
Beautiful segue there.
yes, is for us to let the world know how they can get a hold of you, where they can find all of these wondrous goods that you have touched. So let us once again mention your debut novel, The Emissary, which really touches on so many of these topics and very clearly not so much the events, but the core being of your heroine, your hero is you. You share so much, so many traits and characteristics. So encouraging very strongly everyone to check out The Emissary. And once again, it's Patricia Corey. Patricia, why don't we tell people how to get a hold of you? Let's tell people about your website,
alrighty,
your social media, et cetera.
Yeah, I'm kind of all over the place. I'm learning how to be a good social media person. So I have a Twitter account, which is called Syrian Voice. I'm on Facebook. My website, I have a few. My main website is SyrianRevelations.net. I have a second one, patriciacorey.com, and I also have theemissary.net. But one thing I want to say is if people can't remember those, just go on Google and Google Patricia Corey, and you will find a plethora of points of reference where you can find me.
And that is true, because I did it myself. And let's give the spelling, of course. It's Patricia, just like Patricia, P-A-T-R-I-C-I-A. Last name, Corey, C-O-R-I. Fascinating person. So many amazing, deep, kind of mind-boggling. I will be recoiling and absorbing many of the things we've talked about for some time to come. And as I finish the book, as our regular listeners know, I always say I don't finish the book before I talk because I don't want to give anything away because I am such a blabbermouth and I have a really hard time keeping secrets. I'm terrible with secrets. I always tell my kids when I'm getting them. And, you know, my wife's always, shut up, don't tell me. Just give it to me. Don't tell me before you give it to me.
Well, so, I thank you for that because there are quite a lot of surprises and twists and turns in this story that people don't expect. And I deliberately don't want them to expect them, to hold them riveted, really. So I hope that that will be your experience and look forward to your feedback.
Oh, absolutely. Well, it already is, but yes, I'm sure I will breeze through. I would imagine, as busy as I am, but just within the next few days, because it is going very, very quickly. Let's also mention your Save Earth's Oceans Foundation. Let's tell people one more time what that's about.
Okay, thank you. It's SaveEarthOceans.org, and we are new. We need support. We need funding. And I am busy at work now in setting up a mission. Well, we've got our mission statement, but setting up new activities to help as much as possible. So if people are interested in helping and being involved, we will be thrilled to have volunteers. And I'm in Los Angeles, and tomorrow I'm speaking at the Westwood Library about the crisis that's just occurred in Marina Del Rey with the dead fish. And that's from 6 to 7:30 p.m., and that's free for people who can come out. And I'll be teaching a workshop in Miami on May 24th and 25th. So if that's interesting to anyone, they can contact me from my website, and I'll give them the scoop.
And last but certainly not least, I'm interested to hear what will be your topic at the Glastonbury Symposium, and that's coming up at the end of July.
I'm going to be speaking about galactic whales and dolphins and the music of the universe and the weaving of the galactic song.
Ah, well, you brought up that topic. You broached that topic here. But, yes, I would be fascinated to hear more on that and to hear more detail. I'm very much a music-related and oriented person. A lot of my writing over the decades has been about music, and my handful of books until this new one, The America's Most Haunted, that's coming out the end of September. Very, very excited about that. But all of my other books are music related, so I'm really fascinated by it. I've always had a fascination with this concept of the music of the spheres and the various manifestations of that and how sound works with our brain and the distinction between what is sound and what is music, what makes music. And it sounds like part of what you're doing here is you're kind of expanding our vision of what music is to include the music of other species.
I am fascinated by the music of spheres, and I have had that experience in an altered state, and I would love to talk to you about that again. Are you anywhere near Glastonbury?
I'm near Cleveland, Ohio.
Oh, okay. Well,
so no.
Maybe we can do this again sometime, and I would love to delve into that subject with you and share with you also some of the information that I'm going to be doing in Glastonbury.
Oh, absolutely. And, of course, as you said at the beginning of the show, this book, this first novel, The Emissary, is the first of a trilogy. So, of course, I will want to follow up and read those books and see where this larger tale, your overarching tale, goes. I am breathless with anticipation.
Oh, you're so sweet. All right, it's a date then. I'll just keep writing as fast as I can so that soon the sequel will be out and you can read that too.
Thank you so much. Wow. Well, as I've said several times, but I really mean it, you are a fascinating person, really interesting, easy to talk to, very pleasant and charming. I can certainly see how people and why people are drawn to you.
Oh, that's very dear of you. Thank you for that.
Thanks so much for being on the show, and of course, best wishes with your continued work in its many and various forms. It seems to me it's very, very important work to get those ideas out there and to be part of the small but rising chorus of voices who are telling us about these very, very different worldviews than even to this moment, although, you know, there's been a lot of changes, but to this, even until now, certainly the majority of the Western world anyway, would find a lot of these concepts to be pretty alien. And congratulations to you and on your strength and on the clarity of your vision that you're able to participate in that and be on the forefront of this new age.
Thank you, Eric, and thank you for all the good work you're doing too, bringing forward all of your wonderful information. Congratulations for all that you do.
Thank you. All right. Thanks so much, Patricia. And
thank you.
Again, one more time, my friends, have a great evening, by the way, and a great week, and best wishes on all you have going on. Once again, for those of you interested in Patricia's work, please do check out The Emissary, check out her various websites, probably the best way to go about it. Other than following the links on the show page, on the Blog Talk Radio show page, that you are listening to at this very moment, which has a number of these links. But just go right ahead and do a search for Patricia Corri, C-O-R-I, through the search engines and find her various outlets. All right. Well, have a great week, everybody. Thanks so much for listening. We have another great show. We're kind of at that time of year when we're really getting booked up way into the future. We're pretty well booked, I think, 2 months out now, and that's great. That's really fun to be able to have that kind of time to plan and think about it and to have just simply that kind of reaction from the guests out there in the radio world, and it's a great time. So thank you very much. Have a great evening, and we'll talk to you next week, Tuesday night at 10 p.m. Eastern. Good night, everybody.
Good night.